Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have a return guest, the most esteemed James Montemagno. He's a principal program manager for mobile developer tools at Microsoft. James, how are you?
I am absolutely fantastic, Jesse. You know, it's always an honor and a privilege on this side of the microphone when I am graced by the one and only Jesse Liberty, and it's an honor to be on the podcast yet again. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. You have, as far as I can tell, about 9 of your own podcasts. Do I have that right?
That is correct. It seems like every other week I'm either starting a new show on Channel 9 or starting a new podcast. I'm actually in the works of another new podcast, which is fun. Yeah, it all started with me and Frank Krueger almost a year ago now. We started Merge Conflict, which is our kind of weekly development podcast, a year ago. And have not missed a week since then, which is super cool. And Frank and I are super good friends, and he's a genius. You know, he's this mastermind behind Continuous and Live Player and all these great, really awesome things. And he doesn't even work for Microsoft. He's just, you know, solo. And we talk about all sorts of stuff, which is fun. And that's mergeconflict.fm. But I keep going, and I have a Xamarin show. I have this one that I do with my chess buddy called Coffeehouse Blunders. And I'm going to start up this new other kind of different one. I'm all over the place, Jesse. I just love it because I don't know if you know, Jesse, I kind of love to talk. It's one thing. I love it.
Yeah, you are. It's astounding that you're not a drug addict, given your energy level.
I'm a drug addict to coffee. It's all caffeine, just nonstop. I had a huge Chemex this morning, which was probably, oh goodness, maybe 24 ounces of coffee. And I'll probably go back later after this podcast and drink another one before I start yet another podcast. So I don't know. I love it. I think that when I get on stage or when I get in front of a microphone, I just get so excited because I'm so passionate about whatever I'm talking about. So I think that's when I started at Xamarin 4 years ago. You know, we met right around that time too. And once I get on stage, I just really want to show and tell developers or anyone really about how much I love mobile development with Xamarin, but also other things in my life. So I tell stories about coffee, or I tell stories about, you know, different conferences or like releasing apps onto the App Store. And I think it's so easy to talk about it when you love it, when you love something. So I think that's probably, you know, why you talk about it, why everyone else, you know, presenters out there talk about things that they're passionate about. So, but one thing that I think is unique about me, and you know, is that I'm not only talking all the time and running my mouth, but I'm also coding, right? So I think that that's an important thing for developers, is that, you know, all my source code is out there, all the libraries I create and plugins and all that stuff is I truly live and breathe code, you know, so that's me.
Yes, absolutely. One of the most prolific that I know. I'm going to take you right into some of the topics because there are some very exciting things going on that you are almost certainly the perfect person to ask about. And I'd like to start by talking about embedding, and maybe you could take us through the couple sides of embedding that have been developing at Xamarin.
Yeah, so it's super interesting. I think at this point we have three different embedding type of capabilities. And now when I say embedding, it's kind of because some of the products have embedding in the name. So I think when I think of embedding, it is kind of taking some sort of feature or some sort of code base and putting it somewhere. So a simple example is our binding technology. So think about, I have a Java library or I have an Objective-C library. I'm going to create a binding and then embed that into my existing Xamarin application. And developers have had that for a long time. Or we also have native embedding, which has been a feature of Xamarin Forms for a long time, which is saying, I have a Xamarin Forms app and I want to put like an iOS or an Android control in this native embedding thing. It's a little bit more complicated, I think, in that terms. So those are two products that have been out there like this, creating a binding and embedding it in your Xamarin application, or doing this native embedding, which is I have a Xamarin Forms app and I want to take a native page or something like that and put it or control into the actual XAML, which is pretty unique. But I think there's two features that I really wanted to talk about in the world of embedding that I think are like a real game changer for not only all of our developers and C# developers and .NET developers and Xamarin developers out there, but also developers that aren't currently today using Xamarin technology. But I first wanted to start with a brand new technology that's in the pre-release. It's not even a pre-release. It's like a 3.0 preview alpha gamma special NuGet somewhere out there that you have to get that totally works awesome. And it's a feature called Xamarin Forms Embedding. And I know that you love Xamarin Forms, Jesse.
I'm very big on Xamarin Forms, and one of these days we'll have an entire show with you about the increasing theory among a number of people that every application should start out as Xamarin Forms.
Now, I have always said, and that's a perfect leadway to this, is that I've always said, and people have quoted me multiple times, that I've said 80% of all applications could be built with Xamarin Forms. And that is because when you think about it, think of a company that is building applications. They may have one or two consumer applications, but they may have 10 or 20 internal, enterprise applications. And enterprise applications in general are a perfect fit for Xamarin Forms, but even quite a few consumer use cases are great for it too. Evolve Conference app, right? I built it. I love it. I think it's fantastic. Might be a little bit biased, but what we also find is that, that 20%, and maybe that's, slowly diminishing as Forms gets better and faster and more improvements over time. But there's that 20% that need that sub 2 second startup time. They need the optimal performance. They're creating really rich media experiences. They're creating, video players. You need every single complexity of recycler views and collection views. And they're doing really complicated things. And they're still sharing those 60 or 70% of code. So these types of applications, which are beautiful native apps built in C# with Xamarin, which there's tons of great use cases and case studies out there of these apps, what they kind of lack is the ability to share some of the user interface, right? It's always been, it's all Xamarin Forms or it's all Xamarin Native. And when I say Xamarin Native, I mean iOS Storyboards, Android XML, and XAML for UWP. So that's been, that's what I fell in love with. And I do love Xamarin Forms. I love both of them. But there are use cases for Xamarin Native. And at the core of it, without Xamarin Native, Xamarin Forms doesn't exist. So that technology has to be rock solid. So what the team has worked really hard on is making a way for Xamarin native developers that are building iOS storyboards, Android XML, and UWP XAML. They're saying, I have these really complex screens, but then there's, 20%, 30%, 40% of my application, which is a simple details view or is a simple settings screen or a simple login screen. And why am I building these screens three different times when I would love to maybe embed a single Xamarin Forms view into my application without any of the overhead or anything like that? Because what would be cool is I could then create another shared project or .NET standard library, create my XAML, my view models, my data binding, all that stuff, and then just inside of my iOS, Android, or UWP apps, essentially call out and convert that Xamarin Forms page into a native page, because Xamarin Forms is native. So Xamarin Forms embedding lets you do that. What's cool now is that you can start sharing screens of Xamarin Forms into your actual Xamarin native app. And it's super simple. It's just a single call. So what you do is this, is for iOS, the difference here is that you're not getting all of Xamarin Forms, right? So you're getting a lot of Xamarin Forms, including the XAML, the data binding, you're getting the dependency service, the messaging center, the core things. The things that you're not getting are like the navigation or some of the app-wide thing, because your app is no longer a Xamarin Forms app, it's a Xamarin native app. So you get most of Xamarin Forms, but you just can embed content pages. So what this means is that you create a shell in your native app. So I say I have this collection view and I have this recycler view. And whenever I tap on an image, let me go create a new Xamarin Forms details page, which is all XAML, all data bound up. But I'm going to create it from my iOS, Android, or Windows one. And then I'm going to say .2UIViewController or .2Fragment or .2Page. Right. And then I use the platform specific navigation to navigate or to swap out that fragment. So what this means, though, is that I have a few lines of code in my actual native application, but that entire page, all of the logic, all of the data binding, everything, 100% is going to be shared now across those three applications. So this means I can start dabbling. I call it dabbling in Xamarin Forms. I can start dabbling in Xamarin Forms without having to go all in and convert my entire application.
Is there a way to pass data from the native page to the Xamarin Forms page?
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. Absolutely. So what's cool about this is that I have this example in this blog post on my blog where I have this image search application. And I need to tap on an image. I need to pass that data over to it. So just like you would probably in the past, is I had a constructor for my Xamarin Forms page that took in the view model, if you will, that was there. And then I set that as my binding context on the Xamarin Forms page. So that means my Xamarin Forms page, which is all in XAML and works and everything like that, when I say to fragment, all of that is in place and it's good to go. Now, if I want to expose some additional properties or some additional things on it, I could add events or actions or something like that so they could talk back and forth. So a good use case would be, or even just use messaging center, actually is probably how I would do it. So they're loosely coupled, is let's say I want to then navigate to yet another page. So now I need my Xamarin Forms to actually talk to my iOS application. So I could use messaging center to send messages back and forth between that Xamarin Forms world and that Xamarin native world. But what we're finding is that this is what developers in the Xamarin native world have really wanted for a long time, because they don't want to have to, you know, convert their entire application to start writing some XAML. And they're kind of sick of writing some of these simple settings pages and about pages multiple times.
Got it. That's very exciting and will be of significant interest to folks who are writing in native. But I think even as a Xamarin Forms programmer, the ability to mix and match gives an opportunity to move beyond custom rendering and instead write some native pages that then can interact with the Xamarin Forms. And I assume there's no preset limits, so you could be 10% native and 90% forms, or 90% native and 10% forms. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, you could essentially what I've started to tell developers now, this is something to try out. That's not, you know, you could easily add into your existing Xamarin native application, and it's not going to have any overhead or any other bearings on your app. So it's really easy to try out, which is really great. So yeah, you can just have a single page, maybe start converting other pages as it makes sense. So you're kind of refactoring your application. And I think the example that David Ortno, who is the PM of Xamarin Forms, what he gave a sample of was he just literally had just a shell. It was just literally just like a shell where there's nothing in the Xamarin native app and it's all Xamarin Forms content pages. I don't necessarily think that that'll be the use case, because you might as well just use Xamarin Forms at that point.
Right.
But I think the use case of saying, like, listen, we have complex screens of our applications, and that's where we need to spend the most time, right? If a user, if you look at Instagram, if a user is spending 80% of their time on the images screen and taking a photo, well, those should be amazing. But if they spend 0.001% of the time on a settings screen or on this other little tiny page, then why are we spending all of this work in the design and the management, where I could just share that view across other all the applications that I'm building? So I think as a Xamarin Forms developer or a Xamarin developer that's using Xamarin Forms, what's nice here is that it's going to be really easy for you to even go back and forth between maybe starting in Xamarin Forms and saying, you know what, I feel like I just want that finely tuned performance, and some of the pages my designer made really complex, and I don't have to give up any of the work that I just made. I think that's a huge win, right? Because I think we've all worked and we've made a POC like really fast, and we're like, well, check this out. Like, I made this entire app in like a day. And then the design team comes back and they're like, we really need this page to be like boom and zoom and bam, awesome, blah, 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 right? And then like you're saying, you're like, oh, great. Now I got to go create 18 custom renders, and I got to go do this thing, and I got to go do this thing. But what I really want to do is actually just do file new Xamarin or Xamarin native application, build those beautiful screens out with storyboards and Android XML. But then all of that other POC work, I'm not going to lose it, right? I can reuse all of it immediately and just convert that over into a Xamarin native application. And I think that's a huge win. So no matter how you're starting today, you can easily mix and match the worlds of Xamarin native and Xamarin Forms. And I think that this is something that developers have asked us for a long time. And some people are like, I wish I had this 2 years ago. And I go, I wish I had it too. But to get it right and to get it perfect for performance and to make it so drop dead simple, you know, it kind of takes some time. And Xamarin Forms had to be where it's at right now. And Xamarin Native had to be where it's at right now. And the actual ecosystem of the different platforms needed to get there. So I think it's a good time that this is coming out. And we're asking for feedback, right? Because we know it's not going to be perfect. This is the first release that you can actually use. And I'll tell you, Jesse, like, I went through this exercise of just, I'm gonna see how it, I'm gonna read this blog post, read the documentation and see how it works. And I mean, I had it working in like under 10 minutes, and I had a whole details page, all the data binding. And I was like, this is beautiful, right? This is how I'm going to demo. You know, I think people get Xamarin Forms, they get the whole concept, but being able to show the marriage between the different components at Xamarin is like this really lovely thing. And it really completes the story.
Yes. One of the things that it does as well, you alluded to this, is that it reduces the risk of starting a Xamarin Forms application. Because if you run into a wall, you can switch over to native and still retain all the work that you did.
Yeah, and I think that's the side effect. I think that that was the unintentionally. We knew in the back of our minds that, hey, if we add this Xamarin Forms embedding feature, it's also going to give developers the out if they need to get down into those nitty gritties, but not lose any of their work. And I think that that is the real takeaway. And this is a feature that these embedding features I'm so excited about, because it's really going to delight developers in a way that I think is they might not even be sure like what this feature is going to be good for. And then all of a sudden, when you're in that scenario, just like you're saying, you're like, oh, you know what? I'm thinking maybe now I should have went Xamarin Native, but I'm 2 months into this project. Well, guess what? Like all of your work is reusable, and just spend a day or two stitching them together and boom, everything is great again, you know, and you're really in that world that's there, or vice versa, right? Imagine that you start a Xamarin Native app and you start building some screens and you're like, I'm just going to start pulling in some Xamarin Forms here and there. And you're like, you know what? Like 90% of my application is Xamarin Forms. Well, time to go all in. Let's do this, right? And you make that big switch and you change your app over and now you're 100% Xamarin Forms. And I think seeing that transition back and forth is going to make developers really happy.
Yes. And before we get to more issues in embedding, one of the things that you've brought up, or that it brings up for me at least, is that there are more and more developers who are coming to Xamarin and going directly to Xamarin Forms. And then they decide, as you were saying, that there's a performance need or a specific UI need, and they need to go over to native to either drop in a control or to build something in native. And they run into a conceptual roadblock of, where do I get that information? How do I learn to do the native part? So do they turn to the Xamarin documentation, or what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, so I think for me, I started in the Xamarin Native because all we had 6 years ago, right? So it was building those screens. This was way before Forms. So like I learned iOS and Android and Windows first. Like that's actually always my recommendation, is to at least learn those building blocks of how exactly does an iOS app work, how exactly does an Android app work, and how does a UWP application work? Because knowing those, even if you only plan on using Xamarin Forms, right, I still recommend that is like the thing to do. Like when you go to our documentation at developer.xamarin.com, there's a getting started, there's iOS, there's Android, there's Xamarin Forms. And that's the order I would do them in based on what kind of platform you're on. Because learning how the fundamentals of accessing controls, doing navigation, passing data between those different platforms really sets you up for success when it comes to Xamarin Forms. Now, it's not going to show you exactly how to do every single bit of polish and animation and all that stuff. And we have great documentation for that. I'm a big fan of Xamarin University. We have tons of free lightning lectures, free video courses that are out there that I think really help get you to that level. I just gave a talk at NDC, which is the Norwegian Developers Conference in Oslo in Norway. And I gave a talk on, it's called Extending and Optimizing Xamarin Forms Applications. It was kind of my level 300 to 400 level talk. And what I mostly said is, these are the things that I've learned building a Xamarin Forms application, like the Evolve application, over time. These are some of the new features that we have. These are some things that are coming down the road. But here's some things that will help you optimize your app. And I spent a lot of time on custom renderers and effects. And I said, how many of you know about custom renderers and are using custom renderers today? And, you know, I would say 70% of the audience raised their hand. And I said, I'm going to tell you right now, you're probably using them incorrect. You're probably overusing them and you don't even know it. And it's actually hurting your perception of Xamarin Forms, and also maybe your application maintainability. So what I said is, the only time that you should be using a custom renderer is when you are, if people don't know what a custom render is, it allows you to subclass any view inside of Xamarin Forms, like a button, a label, or just a view, and implement custom implementations of them. So I have like a circle image that cuts out a circle and does some stuff. I said, you're using them wrong, because if you're subclassing a Xamarin Forms control, like a button, and you're using a custom renderer to light up a feature or a missing property, then you're doing it wrong. If your custom renders are just a few lines of code, you're doing it wrong. And I can see exactly why you'd be doing it wrong, because that was the only way that you could really do it in the past. I said the only time that you want to use a custom render is when you want to bring in a control that doesn't exist in the world of Xamarin Forms. For instance, I said, let's bring in a Google AdMob ad. And this is a perfect use case where it's an ad. You know, it's never going to be in Xamarin Forms, because who knows if you want to use Google ads, if you want to use some different Windows ads, you want to use some Apple ads, who knows? We're not going to make that choice for you. But I said, look, here's my custom render. It's 40 lines of code, and I have an ad in my application, and it's just this easy to do this. And I said, that's the only instance that you really want to do it. And if you take a look at companies like Infragistics or Telerik or DevExpress or SyncFusion, right, they've created these rich iOS and Android controls. And they've also created rich custom renderers for those controls for Xamarin Forms and added all these properties. And I said, what you really want to be doing is when you want to just spice up a specific control, you want to use effects. And effects, what they do is they allow you to essentially create kind of like attached properties in a way. So an effect isn't a custom implementation of the control. It is something that gets invoked when that control is added to the screen. So what I mean is I have a entry, which under the hood is like a UI text field on iOS. So I can add an effect to this. And in the XAML, I say, entry.effects. And I say, this effect is the outline effect. And the effect has like no state, really. There's really nothing to override. There's no real, it's really easy to implement. An effect has an onattach and onDetach. And like, that's it. And attaches and effects are very generic. So you can have an effect that applies at a base level view. So you could attach it to anything. So what's cool here is when you get onAttach, you can just say, well, this is a property that doesn't exist in Xamarin Forms and I want to modify it. So I want to make on iOS, instead of it being a data field that I can enter text on, I want it to be a more of a box shape, or I want it to be see-through, or I want to, you know, change some different properties or do something like that. Where previously you'd have to say, I'm going to create a whole custom renderer, and then it can't really inherit from a custom render. You run into this, like, remember when we had DLL, how it was like custom renderer hell, where like people have custom renders and I have custom renders, and how do I mix and match these? Well, effects allow you to kind of combine those all together up. So I think like when you're in the world of Xamarin Forms, like think about it. I think custom render is like the easy thing that people are like, oh, just create a custom renderer. I'm like, oh no, actually probably what you want to do is create an effect, because they're super lightweight and they're very easy to not only see in the code, because you don't have to bring in a custom control or anything like that, but all you're doing is essentially attaching this little hook into the control. So I think the best place to learn about those things are to go through the documentation. When you're like, oh, I want to do this thing on this one control, how do I do it? Well, go into the guides or the recipes and see how it's done and drag in some of that code. I think that's probably how I would recommend going through those. And also what's nice is when you Google anything, just add Xamarin. This is what I do half the time, honestly, is like when I look for something, I'm like, oh, I want to do this thing on Android Xamarin, just add Xamarin at the end. And there's probably some Stack Overflow or some Xamarin Forums post or something like that. And the nice thing is with the effects is that you don't have to worry about setting up anything or anything like that. You literally just get the control and you just set properties on it or set events or anything like that on it. So I think that's the win, is knowing when to use each of them. And even if you look at the Evolve conference app, I had very little custom renderers and very little effects. I didn't really have much on there. It was more laying out the different controls to get it in there.
Yes, and that was great. But I tend to think of it as not two options, but three, which is custom rendering, use it rarely, use it sparingly when you absolutely have to, effects, which allow you to extend the properties. But then there are controls that exist on one of the platforms for which there is no generic necessarily in Xamarin Forms. And that's where the issue of taking a native control and embedding it comes up.
Yeah, I think that, so that's the other newer feature of, and all these, like, they have like a weird, interesting name. So like, it's called like native embedding, Xamarin Forms native embedding, not to be confused with Xamarin Forms embedding. So, yeah, so that idea is actually really unique, which is that we have these really powerful, XAML namespaces. And what you can do is you can say, this is my iOS, my Xamarin iOS specific namespace. And then you can say iOS UI button, and then you can actually put the UI button in there. Or for instance, yeah, you get a control. It's like a card swipe view. So you're like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, this is in Android. So on Android, you know, card swipe view, and then it just, boom, automatically works. I think that there's some restrictions really with that because it's doing a lot of just kind of build and runtime trickery. So it's a little bit harder to get access to the code behind. So I think in some instances it's worth trying out. But often I just say then if it's a control that really doesn't exist, probably a custom renderer like that add example where I needed to manage some anytime that you have to do more than just add the control and you need to manage some of the lifecycle state, like an add, for instance, you need to actually create the add, load the add, and ensure that the add gets loaded. Or for instance, maybe someone did an in-app purchase and you don't want to load the ad, so you need some state inside of there. That's when probably a custom control and a custom renderer comes into place.
Makes sense. Now, my absolute favorite name for a feature is the Embedinator. Can you tell me what the Embedinator is and who named that?
Yes, that is correct. The Embedinator specifically 4000, not to be confused with the Embedinator 3000, because this one is 1000 better with the Embedinator 4000. Now, I don't actually know. I think maybe Miguel would know where the history of the Embedinator 4000 came from. But this is a Mono project library. So this is a project that lives in the Mono repo. So it's not in a Microsoft repo. It's not in a Xamarin repo. It's in a Mono repo. And the idea of the Embedinator 4000 is this. Think of, we're all C# and .NET developers, and we live in the world's best IDEs, the world's best programming languages, C# and F#, and we get to share code across all of these different platforms. And we love it. We live in this just beautiful, wonderful world of creating native apps, getting native performance and native UI everywhere. But we really want .NET and C# to be absolutely everywhere. I mean, that's my dream and goal, is that everyone is using C# and putting it everywhere. So the Embedinator 4000, which, yes, is the best product name probably ever. And I think I gave a lightning talk on it at .NET Fringe a few weeks ago, and everyone thought I was joking. And then they saw the demo and they're like, whoa, that's the coolest thing ever. And the idea here is that I've talked to so many developers and so many enterprises out there, and they are in three different scenarios. One, they're like, we're all in on Xamarin. This is great. This is amazing. Scenario two is they're like, hey, we're in on Xamarin, but we have all of these legacy Objective-C and Java applications out there. And then there's other companies that are like, you know, we're still investigating cross-platform. We're not really sure, but we already have our Objective-C and our Java teams today, right? Maybe they have a C# team. So they're like okay in the silo approach. They know that eventually they need to go cross-platform, but they're still investigating, right? And picking what technology they want to go to. So what the Embedinator 4000 says is, they say, what if we could start those developers that are building, you know, native language, iOS, Android, and Mac applications in Objective-C, Swift, or Java? What if we could enable them to build a .NET library with all their business logic? So maybe this is their view model where it goes off, makes a RESTful service call, pull down some data, deserializes it, all that stuff. And what if we enabled them to turn that .NET library into a shareable native library that can be consumed across Java, Android, Objective-C, and Swift, iOS, and Mac applications, and in the future, maybe even Linux applications or C++ applications. So what this does is it turns, you go into Visual Studio for Mac or Visual Studio, and you create a .NET library. Just a little .NET library, totally great. And you probably create a library for Android and for iOS in there too. And what you do is you compile it up, so you have a .NET DLL, and you run the Embedinator 4000. And you can run it manually or maybe part of your CI, or I have it as a build step, part of my build process. And what it will do is for each platform, so for iOS, Android, or for Mac, it will generate a native library API for you. Because you got to think, we already have .NET that can literally run everywhere. So what if we did the reverse of the binding technology, which is saying, The binding technology that we give Xamarin developers says you can take Objective-C and Java, shove it into .NET applications, but what if you can take .NET and shove it into your native language Objective-C and Java applications? So like truly a way for these language, these developers that have no cross-platform to have some cross-platform immediately and take advantage of C#, Visual Studio, and .NET.
Well, you're clearly highly dedicated to as many on-ramps as possible. And this sounds like a very powerful one.
I think so. I think that, yeah, exactly. It's an on-ramp step, which is, oh, you know, you're not really sure about the Xamarin thing or even going cross-platform, but we know that we need to share code. Everyone knows that we need to do this, right? You need to share code across the different applications. And right now, when you look at the different technologies that are doing that, a lot of them are web-based. Type of things where you have to shove in some Cordova thing or some React Native thing or some other, you know, cross-platform C++. A lot of them are even C++ libraries where you're like, oh, great, now I got to go learn JavaScript or I got to go learn C++ and I have to figure out how to bridge all this stuff together. Well, the Embedinator says, hey, listen, just use a language that you're going to love, because if you know Swift or you know Java, you're going to easily transition into C#, which is a super amazing, the best programming language. You're going to use a great IDE to do this, and we're going to make it really simple for you to just easily integrate it into your dev process. So maybe you're modifying some code, you build it, you hop back over to Xcode. Now it generates all of the header files for you, and it exposes a super clean Swift or Objective-C output for you, which is super nice if you're an Objective-C or Java or Swift developer. So this means that you think of it just as another library that you maybe got off the internet or from CocoaPods or from Maven or something like that. It's just another library, but this is a library that you're creating and are sharing across all of your company and all of your applications. So it's a way to start saying, we have all this logic that we're writing multiple times, and I don't want to do that. Additionally, what it does is I find that a lot of development houses and a lot of enterprises, they may have an existing Objective-C and Java team, but they have tons of ASP.NET and C# developers that would love to contribute to the mobile applications all the time. And often the website may be running faster implementing new features because these dev teams need to write the feature three times. Well, they're saying, hey, listen, we're going to just help out, write this library, and you can just consume it. And you can consume this library into your existing applications.
How much of what we've been discussing is platform specific? That is, how much of this will run or work in Visual Studio for Mac?
Yeah, so everything I've talked about today would live inside of VS for Mac, right? When it comes to the Embedinator, you're essentially creating just libraries. You could essentially run it on Mac or PC. I think the current, it's in like a preview state right now to do just iOS and Mac bindings for developers. So you would essentially live over there because you'd be doing that iOS and Android work. And I think it fits nice because if you think of the existing Objective-C or Java developer, they're probably already on a Mac because they're using Android Studio or they have to use Xcode. So they're already on a Mac. So the nice thing there is that they would be using VS for Mac and outputting it right there. So I think it would fit really seamless. They don't have to worry about hopping back and forth across the different devices that are there. They're just sitting integrating it into their normal dev flow.
Okay, you want to make any predictions on parity between Visual Studio Mac and Visual Studio 2017?
Well, I think that that's a great question. A feature parity, I think, is always one thing that we've worked on. Even when we were just Xamarin for Visual Studio and Xamarin Studio, we always tried to add as many features as we possibly could. I think with VS for Mac, what you're going to see is that we've attempted to make it a web, cloud, and mobile IDE first, which means that we're really focused on .NET Core, ASP.NET Core, Azure integrations, and of course, all of your Xamarin workloads. So I think what you're going to see is a feature parity between all of those products, which means that you're going to see better controller scaffolding. You're going to see better Razor templating support, just better IntelliSense across the board, especially when all of the new text editor things are installed. Now, I think what you're going to see even more over time are some of the other integrations that developers have wanted. And maybe you're using in VS 2017, but maybe you're, hey, you're an existing, maybe, you know, Objective-C developer, but you need to do like Azure Functions, right? So you'd be able to boot up Visual Studio for Mac, create a new Azure function, and then publish it. Or heck, you're a Unity developer. Today, you can already use Visual Studio for Mac, just like you would use Visual Studio 2017 and do all of your Visual or Unity debugging and development right inside of Visual Studio for Mac. I just did a Xamarin show with JB from the team on that. So I think all of the teams are getting on, right? And it's the difference, though, is that there's developers that are building extensions for Visual Studio 2017 have to go through the rigmarole of creating, you know, a bulk of that again, or at least the scaffolding for it. Now, I think over time, though, you're going to see, you know, those features start to come over. So what are the most popular features that people are using in 2017 that make sense over on a Mac? So I think a lot of it will come down to the ASP.NET side of things and make that really seamless, the publishing flows that are out there, especially when like ASP.NET Core 2.0 comes out, you know, this fall, and .NET Standard 2.0 comes out. Does that make sense? Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And you alluded to a couple parts that I'm particularly interested in, which is Azure Functions. And one of the questions that comes up is integration between the client side and the Azure mobile services. I don't think you're calling it that anymore, but essentially those services that Azure provides for mobile applications and how tightly integrated those are.
Yeah, so I think with Azure Functions, you know, the idea of having these tiny little functions that can run and do anything, serverless compute is one of my favorite, all my topics are favorite topics, or else I wouldn't be talking about them. I think we do such amazing things at Microsoft, and just the development community as a whole is doing ridiculous things. When I think of machine learning, and I think of serverless compute, and I think of that all of a sudden I have a Cosmos DB that I'm replicating with one button click and scaling it out to hundreds of instances. Like, that is bananas to me. Like, we live, like, I always say is the best time to become a developer, to be a developer. And every day it just happens, like every conference, everything, it's just always better. And it's so exciting. And there's so much to learn. So I think Azure Functions and serverless compute is one of those unique things where I need to run everything, I need to run something every 5 minutes or 10 minutes, or I need an event-based architecture where I insert something into a database and then something else happens. So with Azure Functions support, there's some new preview tooling. I'm pretty sure it's out or it's coming out soon, and we talked about it at Build, which for VS for Mac will allow you to do all of your Azure Function development offline. So you can test and deploy locally your Azure Functions to test your code. You can do that in VS 2017 today. So that means I can easily do like a webhook, or I could do some blob storage type, processing that's there, and then publish it right into my Azure Functions on the portal, which will be nice. Now, the integration, I think, between Azure Mobile Apps, which is our backend as a service, and Azure Functions, you know, they can live in a very seamless world. You can essentially hook up an event to say, hey, every single time someone inserts some data, trigger this function and do something. I have this actually set up today where, I have this app for my brother that he runs some phone stores, where it's like a directory of all of his stores and people can leave comments. So what I have is I have a little Azure function that gets run that says, hey, every time someone submits feedback, go ahead and trigger this Azure function, pass it the data. And what I then do is I send my brother an email with the data, right? So he can just get an email every single time someone leaves feedback immediately. Mm-hmm. And like, that's kind of a cool integration point, I would say, between those two worlds. When you think of this event based, like, hey, I could run all this logic on my server, but then my server has to be up all the time. I'm just going to let it spin up and spin down. I'm just going to do a lot of this processing on this Azure function that can, that I'm paying for by the millisecond, you know? So it's kind of this interesting world where, based on your use case, I think it's quite interesting. And it supports every sort of language too, which I think is really unique. So I think that's the thing that you're going to see is for Azure Functions and for even ASP.NET, right? We want to ensure that if you're writing Razor templating, HTML, JavaScript, C#, whatever you're doing it in, you have that rich environment that you'd expect out of, you know, VS 2017, whether you're in VS Code or for VS Mac. Ideally, the flow between the two IDEs and then the code editor of VS Code are kind of more seamless. So you, as a developer that's using anything in the Visual Studio family, feels really connected, because they should feel connected. They should feel like a family of products that all are very happy and we're happy as developers using.